This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 551. Actually recorded on May 29th, pushed out sometime after that. So not sure when, but if you're listening to it, hearing it, then watching it, then you know it was successful. This is Martin Spriggs and the show about technology and ministry. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am toasty warm, Martin Spriggs. It was 101 degrees in New Ulm yesterday, so.
Ouch.
In the heat wave.
Ouch. Yeah, now, last week we celebrated your last podcast from the confines of the Draper household, sitting this there on week. Whatever street that is in New Ulm. Unless you've done a magical job in recreating the studio in your motorhome, I don't think you're in it.
I don't think I'm in it either, but you know, anticipation builds. That's all I can say. We will be there next week. I just think, or else we'll be in serious trouble. So just wait for it.
Matt is joining us, and he's where he always is, right in front of his Chuck Norris poster. Hey, Jason, yep. How are you?
And doing great, Martin. How are you doing?
Good. Jason, just for those of you who don't know who you are, a brief introduction would be helpful.
Sure. Yeah, I'm the technology director for Bennington Public Schools just outside of Omaha. I work in a K-12 district, and we have 2,800 kids and a few hundred staff members and a whole bunch of Chromebooks and stuff like that, and get an opportunity to work with technology on a daily basis. And then also one of the great privileges that I have is to serve on the adjunct faculty at Martin Luther College. So I get to, you know, teach a few classes about Google and other educational technology concepts that are out there, and you know, still get to kind of scratch that ministry itch that way. So appreciate the opportunity always to be on the podcast and talk with you guys about some interesting stuff.
You like robots and drones.
Robots, drones, 3D. I pretty much, I'm just a big kid is basically what it boils down to. Right. Like, yeah, you know, maybe you can. I'm hiding it. So I've got like
that's probably the best introduction we could provide for you. Just a big kid.
That's pretty much it. Yep.
Very
been
nice.
Been joining us for quite a while on the Wells Tech podcast. Once a month, each month during the school year, we focus on education and technology. And Jason's been on and off in that rotation for many years. And this is the wrap up of the 2017-18 school year. And looking forward to the end of the school year and a little bit different or change of pace in the summertime. So. Yeah.
And a little lighter topic today, which is kind of nice at the end of the school year, right? Things to do at the end of the year instead of watching a movie. Is that a thing? Do teachers just throw on a movie and say, hey, I've had enough?
Well, I can't speak for other teachers, but I know for sure I was there. Like, you just get to a certain point in the year, you're just done. You're done. You know, you're done. The kids are done. We're just putting in time. You know, let's do something fun. Let's do something interesting. And, you know, and a lot of times what I see happen a lot is teachers will default to something easy. Let's watch a movie. Let's put on a documentary or something like that. And then, you know, I see it. It kind of makes me cringe a little bit. Our last day with students was on Friday, and I probably saw maybe about 50% of the classrooms that I walked past. There was something showing up on the screen, and then teachers were off to the side working on their grades, because their grade book deadline was midnight on Friday, so they had to get stuff in. And it's just really passive screen time basically for our students, and that's not necessarily,
it doesn't have to be like that, does it?
No, it really doesn't. And, you know, the I just gave a workshop here with some teachers in my district about a month ago, and that was kind of what prompted this whole discussion topic that we had going as I shared that presentation with you guys, and I'm sure that'll get into the show notes too. But, you know, just kind of, you know, what are some things that you can do with kids and with your students when everybody's done, but you're still in school and you really want to make good use of that time? And especially, you know, I have a big conversation that we have in my house is talking about things and limiting things that we call passive screen time. So there's a difference between just sitting there watching TV or watching a movie or, you know, just passively letting things come in as opposed to doing something that actively engages with your brain. You know, I'm writing a computer program. I'm doing something with a robot. I am designing something. You know, one of the projects that I had my 12-year-old son do was like, all right, you know, we've got to make a cornhole board game. And you guys know what cornhole is. It's like, the beanbag toss. That's what we call it in Nebraska. I've been living here long enough. I call it North Fork instead of Norfolk like everybody else does. but, you know, and it's just one of those things, you know, where a screen might be involved, but there's brain activity going on. It's not just passively taking things in. And that was really what I wanted to focus on with my teachers in this is where, you know, you're actively, let's engage the brains. Let's do something that is, you know, maybe somewhat beneficial rather than just something that's really passive.
And, you know, this is a ministry technology podcast, so we do tend to talk predominantly about technology, but not all these ideas are super ed tech intense or based or whatever. However, what I really like and what I think is you know, taking it to the next level is having all these technology tools in your tool belt and being able to customize and do things creatively because you can make use of some technology that you're aware of. And so, you know, it may not be a super ed tech activity, but using technology, you can customize and make it creative and stuff. So cool ideas related to that.
So why don't we go through a couple of these ideas, Jason, if you wouldn't mind?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So one of the activities that I think is just really fun, it's an activity called Caption This. So I'm just going to take you through this just really quickly from start to finish because it's super easy. So, you know, what I will do as part of a workshop or what I would suggest teachers do as part of a classroom activity is to give students a picture or something in Google Drawings. So they can actually just type in drawings.google.com and then that'll take them right to a blank drawing. It really makes it super easy to get something started. But then there's a search bar or there's a search that you can do right within Google Drawings. So you just go to insert and then go to image and then we can search the web. And this finds everything it's already copyright cleared and, you know, and it's powered by Google. So it's going to have a lot of really good results. So let's just say Washington crosses the Delaware. Okay, so we've got this painting. I want to put that one in, and I'm going to insert that. So you just select it, you click insert, it goes in, and then now you've got something in here. And then it can be kind of fun. You know, you can you can add text on top of this. Google has some really fun, like if you you can go into callouts, and you know, we can have what was George Washington thinking when he did that or when he was doing this, and we can double click in there and put whatever text we want. So it's really kind of an intuitive interface to do that kind of stuff. Or another thing that we've found that kids really enjoy are memes, and they enjoy making memes. So you can just insert some word art, and if we just enter in some text, and actually we probably should make it all capital letters.
In true meme format, yes.
In true meme format, that's right. And then we can do some formatting on there. We just change the font. Its impact is the meme format or is the meme color, meme font. There we go. I was going to get there eventually. Mm-hmm. You just add a black border to it, make it white, and then now we've got something that's we can memeify it from here. So, you know, really simple kind of things like that. And then, just have kids do something like that. So there again, you know, it's outside of the norm. It's not something that they would typically do. And then it'll also get them kind of engaging their creative brains. But at the same time, it doesn't take a whole lot of work for you to put something like that together. All you got to do is, as a teacher, just come up with some parameters. This is what's allowed. This is what's not. Here's how I want you guys to do this. And then we'll get together and we'll share it. You know, real quick, that'd be a good 45-minute activity to do with a group of upper elementary kids.
And you get them in two groups themselves or individuals, or how does it to work best in this particular case?
Well, it kind of depends on the kids and the size of the group. I've seen a lot of success with working in groups of three is about where that's kind of the sweet spot for what I've seen. But it also might depend on what are you trying to get at? You know, if it's just something to do, then putting them in groups actually makes it take longer. And then you could just call it collaboration time. So that kind of makes it so you can get away with it a little bit more. But if you just need something like a little filler or something like that, you know, just, okay, I want you to, we've got 10 minutes. I want you to find a painting, or I want you to find a picture, make it a meme, and then be able to explain it. And we're going to do this, you know, here's our 10-minute timer. Time gets up, then we're going to start going through presenting buddy or shoulder partners or something like that. So, you know, there are a couple of different ways that you could organize that kind of an activity.
Fun stuff. All right. Another thing that kids really enjoy and that's growing in popularity is coding, or learning to create with computer programming, basically. And one of the popular platforms is Scratch. Maybe there are fun things for kids to do in Scratch as well.
Yeah. Scratch is, I love Scratch as a platform. It's just so accessible, and you can have kids, you know, anywhere from, I mean, they make it so that like a preschooler or a kindergartner can work with Scratch in certain environments. So, you know, it's really a lot of fun and can be incredibly complicated at the same time. So I have a ninth grade student in our high school who basically gets heard of Undertale. Mm-mm. It's this really elaborate, hugely complex text-based video game. And he recreated it in Scratch, which was just amazing to me. But one of the things that we have some of our students do is they create games using Scratch. So you can map, you can bind keys on your keyboard to have the character do certain things, and you change the costumes so that it looks like it's moving, and add animations and all that kind of stuff. It's pretty upper level to get to that point. You know, it's not just, okay, this is our first day of Scratch, we're going to build video games. But if you are in for something that's maybe a longer term project, there's an entire course that Google has created with CS First. And I should have gotten you guys this link before, but I will pull that up again. Google has an entire curriculum built around creating a video game using Scratch. So there are some really, really great resources at csfirst.withgoogle.com. And then if we scroll down a little bit on this page, we have game design right here. And teachers can register a club. You can, you know, they call it a club, or you can just make it a course. But they can go into that, and it gives them all of the materials. It creates accounts for kids. You get handouts and stickers and booklets and all these really great materials that you could do to run that entire curriculum. And then once they've gone through something like that, they'll know how to make those different kinds of games and what those concepts are. And then that's kind of your jumping off point for making those. But, you know, if it's one of those things too, where, you know, like if you're just looking at a platform game, these nine pieces, each of these videos is like 1 to 3 minutes. and that will show them how to do the different things that they need to do. So really, if you just wanted to do the platform game, you could do that in like a day or two in preparation for, and by a day or two, I mean like a, like 1 or 2 45-minute class periods. So, you know, if you're talking about trying to do something at the, on a larger scale for a classroom or for a self-contained classroom, you could set aside 90 minutes. All of your kids could go through those tutorials, know what they're doing with the platform game, and then be able to build their own and take that and incorporate that into whatever content that you wanted to do. So there again, you know, it's not, it's a game, it's fun. And it can be fun. It can also be, a friend of mine calls it funstrating, where, you know, it's really fun, but it's also really frustrating. But, you know, that could be another, avenue for kind of expressing some of that creativity. And then also, you know, doing something, just doing something interesting, rather than just passively consuming media.
So is Scratch web-based? Can you do it on a Chromebook, or do you have to have certain hardware, et cetera?
Oh, Scratch 2.0 is Flash. So so you have to, if you're a Google Apps school, you have to enable that content in your admin console. Otherwise, Chrome is kind of phasing that out. There's a new version of Scratch coming out very soon that's going to be HTML5, and then that'll work on thing. So that'd be Chromebooks, iPads, whatever. And it's all web-based. So once you create an account, you log in, you do your stuff, you can access it anywhere you can access the internet.
Good stuff. All right. Other ideas that made your fun things to do besides watching a movie list?
Well, anything that that gets kids thinking about different things. So one of the projects that that I recommended is it's called a history mystery. So you basically you get a historical picture, and these are maybe take a little bit more preparation on the part of a teacher, unless you can find something that's already pre-made. But you know, there's the example that I have is there's a boat that was buried underneath a street in San Francisco. You know, so why was it there? How did it get there? And you know, just getting kids to think about those things, come up with an explanation, and then you provide a little bit more information for them, and it takes them a little bit further down the road, and then kind of have them hypothesize and extrapolate from there. It's so, you know, a critical thinking kind of an activity can be, you know, both educational and applicable, maybe even to your subject area, but at the same time, it's way different than anything that they're doing on a regular basis, so you have fewer management issues, and it's more fun for the kids. Another thing that we do a lot of in our district is we do maker projects. So one of our elementary schools they have what's called a day of design, and they basically get a whole bunch of open-ended challenges, and they bring in tons of cardboard boxes and duct tape and utility knives and you know, all of this, all of these different, just, you know, basically just stuff that people would normally throw away. And now kids need to go through and create something. So, you know, they'll get a box of materials and say, okay, here you've got a roll of duct tape, you've got 5 cardboard boxes, you've got a couple of wooden dowels and some fishing line. Make a game. And your game has to have rules. It has to be, you know, what materials do you need? How do you put these things together? If it's going to be put together, you know, you're going to build it or whatever. And then you've got to come up with a marketing plan for it. And you got to tell other people how to play it. And then, and come up with a catchy name for it. So, you know, I had lots of kids invented tape ball. And there was always a different variation on it, you know, depending on what the kids' interests were or what they were, you know, what they like to do or anything like that. And something like that, you know, I mean, it just takes time. You know, you just have to have, you take time to gather the materials is really what it puts, what you do. So, you know, put a message out to the congregation. Hey, we're doing this project on this day. If you've got cardboard boxes, we'd love to take them off your hands. And then have people come the next day to help clean up. because that's the other that's the other issue that you're going to have to worry about with something like that. But those are both projects that are pretty accessible and can be a lot of fun. You know, if we're looking at it something from like the tech side, it's actually, you know, you can make a podcast on a relatively low budget. You know, we don't need to have really fancy microphones or anything like that. Even a platform just like Seesaw or something like that, where students, you know, record a message into a computer, and you know, it works on a Chromebook, works on an iPad, whatever. They can record something, and then it gets posted to your blog that's tied to Seesaw. That's a really easy content hosting platform, but you can get really elaborate. You know, you can build a website to go along with it if you want, or throw stuff into Dropbox, generate RSS feeds. And there are a lot of really good tools out there for creating podcasts. I mean, all you have to do is be able to record audio, and then you can put that wherever you want. So
can imagine a lot of end of year ideas around interviewing each other about their memories of the school year, interviewing teachers, reflecting on the school year, maybe even giving advice to the next class that's coming in, leaving them some tips and tricks. So
right, yeah,
a lot of fun.
That could be a lot of fun, and a good way to get your parents kind of interested in something too.
Sure. Sure.
It's nice. Great ideas, Jason. Thanks for sharing that. And as Jason mentioned, these are in a presentation that he has given and has shared, and we'll put that in the show notes. So it doesn't have to be the same old. There are different creative options. You just need a little bit of planning. So tuck that away and maybe get thinking about that for next year. Or if you've got more weeks to go this year, you've got some opportunities. Let's move on, and we have our news in tech segment, and the FBI is sending all of us some suggestions for how we manage our home networks.
Right. Over the long Memorial Day weekend, there was news out of the FBI that they wanted us to reboot our home routers to destroy some viral things that were taking over from a Russian cybersecurity breach. And it says over 500,000 routers have been affected by this. They are calling it VPN filter. And the good news is that they were able to take control of the website that was controlling this Russian hacking group. And by doing that, they kind of stopped things in their tracks. But if you are infected, you need to not communicate anymore. And by rebooting your router, basically unplugging it and replugging it back in, it would stop the communication with that viral website or whatever it is. So yeah, it came from the FBI. It came from the Department of Justice and the Homeland Security. Everybody was trying to communicate with us to reboot our routers. So if you haven't taken the time to unplug for a few minutes, then perhaps now would be a good time to do that.
And go outside for a little bit.
Yeah. We unplugged yesterday. I'm sure you guys did as well, right? Or not quite yet.
When I do, you'll hear the screams in southern Minnesota there. It'll come back though.
Yeah, your doorbell doesn't work anymore. TV's off. The garage door doesn't open. Lights don't go on. You know, the world ends for just a few minutes there. Ah. All right, let's move on to Wells now.
And you two are very well aware of this fact because the three of us are part of the planning committee for the upcoming Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit, which will be happening next summer, June 25th to 27th, 2019. And what we need from those that are listening and watching today's podcast is for them to submit their ideas as presenters at the conference. We're looking for people that are willing to put together a presentation of about 50 minutes in length to be presented at the conference on all types of technology or education or leadership topics. And we have a web page out at wellsedtechlead.com where you can fill out our online form and give us your great ideas. And our committee will be meeting this summer to make final decisions on presenters and topics for the conference, and we'll be getting that word out as soon as possible. But definitely want you to be a part of it if you have some great presentation ideas to share in any of those areas.
Very good. And that's wellsedtechlead.com, and there's all kinds of good stuff there. You can sign up for a newsletter and call for presenters there as well. But hurry. That time in our show where we share some tips or picks of the week, and we let our guests go first. And Jason, you qualify for that, and I bet it has something to do with robots.
Well, yeah, you know, you gotta you gotta set the bar low so it's easy to meet that. Yeah, so my pick is the SparkFun Inventors Kit for Microbit. So I love SparkFun. I don't know if I've ever mentioned them before on the show. I'm just kidding. I know I talk about them probably every time I'm on here. But they're a super cool company out of Boulder, Colorado, and they manufacture all their own stuff, and they ship out these really, if you're at all into hacking hardware or how electronics work and all of that kind of stuff, these their inventor kits are fantastic. And what I really have grown to appreciate is a board called a Microbit. So a Microbit is kind of like the spiritual successor to a Raspberry Pi. So you know, you have a Raspberry Pi is the size of a credit card. A Microbit is about the size of, I don't know, half a credit card. You know, it's just it's a cheap little computing device that packs a lot of really neat technology in there. And it's meant to be something to interface with hardware. So you have 20 pinouts on there, which is the same number that you get on a breakout board for a Raspberry Pi. You can blink LEDs, you can add buttons and all of that kind of fun stuff. You learn about resistors, and there's some great tutorials and things, an experiment guide that goes along with it. And what we use that for is something called a robot petting zoo. So like you see right here, this is King Panda the Third, and the sixth graders who worked on this, they added you see his arm is waving up and down, and then you can't really see him, but there are some LED lights that are on there. And then they also had it rigged up so that every time the arm came down, it played like a trumpet call or something like that on the Chromebook that it was attached to. So, you know, all of those different components were done with a $40 kit or $50 kit. And it doesn't have to be, you know, anything real difficult, you know, and the curriculum that they give you is really well done and, you know, very easy to extend and expand and kind of take that knowledge and apply it to different things. So the SparkFun Inventors Kit for Microbit, something that I've recently fallen in love with.
I noticed when you had it up on your screen that it said back ordered. Unfortunately, it looks like they're out of stock. Hopefully they restock soon.
Well, and it's probably just a single component of the kit. Like it's usually things like the battery pack is usually what's on back order. So, you know, if you just want to get the Microbit and you know, kind of play around with it, or, you know, they have different kits that are beyond just that inventor's kit. There's a class pack that has fewer pieces to it. You know, you don't get a breadboard, but you get jumper wires and servos and LEDs and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's still a lot of options for some of the things that you could do with it, but definitely check them out. And
pretty reasonably priced too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, for sure.
Are you doing robotics camps at all this summer, Jason?
You know, we were talking before the show started about a couple of the projects that we have going on this summer. So unfortunately, the calendar did not agree with me to be able to get a robotics camp together. Otherwise, I feel really bad about it. But I just couldn't fit it into the calendar this year.
Yeah. Always next year.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
How about Kevin this summer, Sally?
Yeah, our calendar is a little booked as well. So unfortunately, no, but we are hoping to do more of that.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Take it on the road.
Sally, what is your pick or tip of the week?
Well, my pick came from an article I read recently from How To Geek, and it's called How and Why You Should Be Cleaning Your Phone and Other Electronics. And I won't show you the petri dishes that they displayed in the article, but they basically swab phones and other unmentionable places that you know are full of germs. And the phones had the same amount of germs as these horrible places as that you wouldn't think of your phone being that dirty. So bottom line is you're touching this all the time and you aren't constantly washing your hands between the time that you're touching your screen. And so it's really important for you to make a conscious effort to clean your screen on a regular basis. And one thing you want to remember is that oftentimes the screens have a protective coating on them. So you don't want to spray, especially alcohol-based cleaners, on your screen because that'll strip off that coating that's protecting it from fingerprints and things like that. They recommend either just water or something that you might get for eyeglasses that is alcohol-free. And they also recommend that you don't spray whatever it is you're cleaning with directly on the screen, but use one of those microfiber cloths, spray on your cleaner, and then clean your screen with the cloth that's damp with, again, either water or a non-alcohol-based cleaner, like the cleaners you would buy for your glasses. If you're cleaning things like mice are very heavily laden with germs as well, especially if you're responsible for a group of computers or computing devices, you can use alcohol on your mice as you're cleaning them or maybe wiping off the keyboard slightly or whatever. Alcohol-based cleaners or even like a Clorox wipe might be okay to use on those devices, but just not on your expensive screens of your smartphones. So just a few tips for cleaning your devices.
And frequency? Recommendation?
They didn't specifically say. They said regularly. So I guess they leave that up to us to determine what's regularly. But if you saw the petri dishes, I'm telling you, you want to clean them real often.
You know, the one thing that scares me the most, and that is a hotel room remote control, TV remote control. Those seem like that would be about as bad as it might
get. Germ-laden as they come, huh?
I've heard somebody that suggested, you know, take a freezer bag or some kind of cellophane bag. You can put those things in to use them.
That's a good idea.
Maybe try and clean it yourself. I think that's a challenge. But good, great advice. My pick, you talked about cleaning your, keeping your devices clean. My pick talks about kind of keeping your body in shape and healthy and your system clean. And that is an app. And before I kind of go to the demonstration of the app, I wanted to pull up an article entitled, this is from verywellfit.com, actually a great website called High Intensity Interval Training and Heart Health. If you haven't heard of HIIT or HIIT, it's a thing. I've done some research over the last few months or so, and as we hit summer, now is the time that you might begin to get back into your workout schedule, get your body back in shape to get out on the beaches, etc. High intensity interval training is actually a very good recommendation for people of all ages. There's been some controversy whether this kind of training, which is kind of interval between very vigorous activity, get your heart rate up very quickly and then rest, and then get your heart rate up quickly and then rest. That's thus the name high intensity interval training. Whether that is something that's safe for all ages, or if you're diabetic or have heart disease, or if you've had heart bypass. There's been a lot of study, and it appears that it is actually very beneficial for people even in those conditions to do this kind of exercise. And sometimes it's a very short spurt, followed by a short spurt of rest, short spurt of activity, short spurt of rest. And of course, when you're doing that, it's helpful to have an app. And there are lots of apps that do that. And the one that I use is called Intervals, HIIT Workout Timer. And very flexible. You can set it up to any kind of interval you want. It can be by distance. It can be by time. It measures heart rate. It tracks your workout route. If you're running, that's kind of what I do at this point. I do a run-walk interval. So for 2.5 minutes, I'm running. For 2.5 minutes, I'm walking. and do that for about 4 miles each day. And it tracks any kind of interval that you would like to put together and in the different kinds of sets. And there are all kinds of suggestions within the app. It is a free app, but you can pay, I think it's $4.99 for in-app purchases that give you all kinds of different suggestions, and it allows you to save workouts and export workouts and share workouts, those kinds of things. It also, if you have an Apple Watch, this is iOS only, but there are a bunch for Google Play users as well. There is a companion app on the watch, which is really handy when you're running, where you can just look at your watch and see how you're doing and what's left in your interval before you get to finally rest, what your heart rate is doing, those kinds of things. Just an excellently done app for iPhone and the Apple Watch called Intervals from Fourth Frame Technologies, a HIIT running and interval timer. So if you haven't heard of HIIT or tried it, or have tried it, it's something that you may want to do a little bit of investigation on. And if it sounds appealing to you, get the app.
Excellent tip, Martin. Thanks for sharing that. And you'll have to keep us up to date on how your HIIT training is going.
Well, so far I'm alive to tell about it. So
that's a good thing. As long as you keep showing up, I approve. So far,
yeah. Let's move on to our ministry resource. And this is something I stumbled on. I don't know if you have it available to show on the screen.
I do. Sally,
but it was a blog post by Church Tech Today, which we're a big fan of, churchtechtoday.com, called Video Conferencing Tools for Bible Study. And there's not, you know, nothing earth-shattering here, just some common sense approaches and some maybe justification for and some benefits of doing Bible class in a video conferencing environment. In the article, they talk about some people that were able to participate from foreign countries and maybe even some countries where their activity was monitored in different ways that they got around that through Google Incognito mode and those kinds of things, just kind of inspiring stories. And then just some suggestions for technology. The one that the blog poster mentioned is uses Zoom, which is one that we've talked about in the past. I think that's what Mike Hartman uses down there for from some Christo Palabra stuff or
Academia Christo.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. There still is Christo Palabra, but his effort is that. So just some good common sense stuff and some details that you may want to consider as maybe you are looking to start your own video conference Bible study. And that is pick the right technology, of course, something that is not overly burdensome on those people who might be fairly low tech. Set expectations early about what can and can't be done. Obviously, you lose some things over video conferencing, but you also want to make sure that people are aware of some of the limitations, you know, maybe talking over each other, those kinds of things. One of the things that I think is important is encourage video. There is always I think something to be gained by seeing somebody. It just increases the richness of the sharing and deeper connections is the point that they were making. And keep the group relatively small, 10 to 15 people tops. I would think that's even a little big. But some good advice. And she closes the article talking about connecting, talked about before. I think you could do it probably over Google Messenger or Microsoft Teams, just kind of keep the conversation going. So just a nice article. Thought it was a good ministry resource about people trying to keep that Bible study habit going through video conferencing tools. A lot of benefits. You don't need to coordinate the location, people having to travel miles, find babysitters, those kinds of things. So good opportunities there.
Good stuff. Thanks for sharing and giving us some ideas. You know, we talked about it earlier, but our friend Carissa Nelson has been running a women's Bible study in a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that there's any video components to that, but there are like real-time video, but she's definitely shared some presentations, and there's been a lot of conversation there. So good stuff, good ideas. Neat to see them being applied.
All right. Let's move on to community feedback.
And we have a couple of things we want to talk about here. First up, from our Wells Tech Google group, where you can ask questions and share ideas. A while back, we mentioned that there was some conversation around the best equipment for live streaming. And just out recently, we heard from Bob Meister, who does audio video type work in his congregation. And he said, we've been video recording and broadcasting for several years. Begin with just audio for archive, then video for archive, then single camera broadcast of the full service, and then a multi-camera live broadcast of the full service. And in the process, this is super cool, he's created different documentation. He has one on the audio video broadcasting. And this is at Bethlehem. I can't remember which Bethlehem Lutheran Church he's at, but there's, like I said, a document about audio video settings and different things to consider and the equipment that they use. And he's documented specific brands and models and things of video mixers and audio inserters and all kinds of different equipment that they make use of there at Bethlehem for their live streaming. The second documentation is really interesting as well. It's on framing the cameras. And so they do have this multi-camera approach, and they've written out documentation of what angles and things you should expect to see from the different cameras. If you're, you know, focusing on the sermon and zoomed in somewhat on the pastor versus a more zoomed out view of the entire congregation and different parts of the service, they use different settings. And again, have very specific documentation written out on how to use the equipment and everything. And I would think this would be a super model for any congregation to follow in terms of writing documentation and, you know, how you, what kind of instructions you need to write out for the people that are going to be running the booth each Sunday. And also just good documentation to have on hand, because these things tend to get forgotten, all these little details. And so getting pictures and the instructions written out, and he uses colors and all kinds of things in his instructions. So please do check out the links that Bob provided as good examples of written documentation, and also for ideas on how you might want to improve your live streaming or your recording of your services, or what equipment might be good to use in those circumstances.
Appreciate you sharing that, Bob. Yeah, excellent examples, and I'm sure it will be used and very helpful.
Mm-hmm. And then we also wanted to make mention that we heard from Pastor James Berenger, who serves as the administrator in the special ministries area. And maybe just a personal shout out to Pastor Berenger. He has so many things that are under his umbrella of responsibility, and that's special ministries area. The one we're going to talk about today is an effort that's just recently been introduced called Freedom for the Captives. And this website byline says, equipping the body of Christ to protect children and empower abuse survivors. And so recognizing abuse and helping those that have been through abusive situations. And they have so many wonderful, just on and on, the amazing resources that are part of the Freedom for Captives website. Recently, Pastor Berenger heard from someone that was using it and linking to it on their website. It was actually a Missouri Synod school, and they also made mention that they're using something called protectmyministry.com, which is a kind of a background check and consent forms and all kinds of things around the staff that's part of your ministry team, so that they've been through proper training, your volunteers are properly trained, and you have a method for documenting that and repeating that as needed. So if you're looking for a tool or some help with you know, the risks that are out there around protecting people from abuse and that kind of things, perhaps protectmyministry.com might be something worth looking into. So thanks, Pastor Behringer, for sharing that.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. I think we are to the point in the show where we share a video of the week.
And this week, thanks to Jason and his cool robotics, we have not one but two cool videos to share about the Spark Fun Inventors Kit for Microbit, and also how Microbit was used in the UK. Jason, it seems like you told us that they gave one of these to every kid in the school system or something like that.
Yeah, that's correct. The BBC actually invented it, and they gave one to every year 7 kid in the United Kingdom. So, you know, however many millions that is, every one of those kids has gotten one of those microbits and learned how to program with it.
So, yeah, a couple of short videos that give you more of an idea of the kind of things you can do with a microbit. One from Spark Fun and then one from the BBC, kind of an overview of some of the projects that were done there. So check those out and learn more about the microbit.
Very good. Jason, want to thank you for joining us once again. We're going to take a little break this summer and not that things will slow down any, but you won't have to chit chat with us at least until the fall if you're up for that again. We really appreciate you taking the time to do this. Always bring your own brand of sunshine and robots and all that good stuff. So that is very much appreciated.
Always happy to be invited back.
Next week, I'm excited to talk about podcasts, ministry podcasts and blogs, and we're going to be having a teacher from right here in Milwaukee who's got the Gird Up podcast. So if that intrigues you a little bit, Charlie Ungemacht is going to join us and talk about his podcast for men, and that is going to be a very interesting conversation. So tune in next week. It will be a little bit later. I'm going to be out of the state for about a week and be coming back Wednesday-ish, and we'll be recording Thursday-ish, and we will be publishing it shortly thereafter. So it will be there. Just be a little bit patient.
And worth the wait, I'm sure.
It will be worth the wait. So thanks all of you for joining us. We really appreciate you deciding that this is worth your time. Please share it with family, friends, whoever might also benefit from a technology in ministry podcast. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.